and I are going to Andereth, Richard said. Kaylin's brow twitched. But if we both... She suddenly looked over at Kara. Alarm shifted to the Mordsith. Why are you both looking at me like that? Richard put an arm around Kara's shoulders. She didn't seem to like it one bit, so he took the arm away. Kara, you have to go to Adendrill.
We are all going to Adendrill.
No. Kaylin and I must go to Andereth. They have the Domini Dirge. They have an army. We have to get them to join us, and then prepare them for the coming of the Order. I need to see if there's anything there that will help stop the Chimes. We're a lot closer to Andereth now than I would be if I had to go there from Adendrill. I can't not look into it. It could be that we can stop the Chimes, and Andereth will surrender, and we will be able to use the Domini Dirge to halt or even destroy Jigang's army. Too much is at stake to let such opportunities slip through our fingers. It's too important, Kara. Surely you can see I have no choice.
No, you have a choice. We can all go to Adendrill. You are Lord Rahl. I am Mordsith. I must stay with you to protect you.
Would you rather I sent Kaylin? Kara pressed her lips tight but didn't answer. Kaylin took him by his arm. Richard, as you said, you are the Seeker. You need your sword. Without it, you are vulnerable. It's an Adendrill. So is the bottle with the spell and Kolo's journal and libraries of other books that may hold the answer. We have to go to Adendrill. Had you only told Zed, we might not be in this position. But now that we are, we must do as he asked. Richard straightened and looked her in the eye as she folded her arms. Kaylin, I'm the Seeker. As the Seeker, I have an obligation to do what I think is right. I admit I made a mistake before, and I'm sorry. But I can't allow that mistake to make me flinch from my duty as I believe it to be. As the Seeker, I'm going to Andereth. As Mother Confessor, you must do what your heart and duty dictate. I understand that. I want you with me, but if you must take another path, I will still love you the same. He leaned closer to her. Choose. Her arms still folded. Kaylin regarded him in silence. At last her ire melted, and she nodded. She glanced briefly at Kara. Seeming to think there was one person too many for the delivery of the inevitable orders, she spoke to him in a low voice. I'm going to see how Dushalu is getting on. When Kaylin was out of earshot, Kara began to speak. My duty is to guard and protect the Lord Rahl, and I will not. Richard held up a hand to silence her. Kara, please, listen to me a minute. We've been through a lot together, the three of us. Three of us have been to the brink of death together. We each have the others to thank in more ways than one for our lives today. You are more to us than a guard, and you know it. Kaylin is your sister of the Aegil. You are my friend. I know I mean more to you than simply being your Lord Rahl, or with the bond gone, you wouldn't have to stay with me. We are all bonded in friendship. That is why I cannot leave you. I will not leave you, Lord Rahl. I will guard you whether or not you allow it. How does it feel to be without your Aegil? She didn't answer. It looked as if she didn't trust herself to try to speak. Kara, would it surprise you to learn I feel the same way about the Sword of Truth? I have been without it longer than you have been without your Aegil. It's an awful, gnawing feeling in the pit of my stomach, a constant, empty ache, like I need nothing so much as to feel that terrible thing in my hand. The same with you. She nodded. Kara, I hate that sword. The same as you surely somewhere inside must hate your Aegil. One time you surrendered it to me, remember? You and Verdine and Reyna? I asked you to forgive me that I had to ask you to keep your weapon for now to help us in our struggle.
I remember.
I would like nothing more than not to need the sword. I would like the world to be at peace, and I could put that weapon in the keep and leave it there. But I need it, Kara, just as you need your Aegil, just as you feel an emptiness without it, feel vulnerable and defenseless and afraid and ashamed to admit it. I feel the same. Just as you need your Aegil because you want nothing more than to protect us, I need my sword to protect Kaylin. If anything happened to her because I didn't have my sword... Kara, I care about you. That's why it's important for you to understand. You are no longer just Mordsith, just our protector. You are more than that now. It's important for you to think and not simply to react. You must be more than Mordsith if you are to be of true help as our protector. I'm depending on you to continue to be an important person in this struggle, a person who can make a difference. Now you must go to Adendrill in my place.
I won't follow those orders.
I'm not ordering you, Kara.
I'm asking you. That is not fair. This isn't a game, Kara. I'm asking for your help. You are the only one I can turn to. She scowled off toward the thunderstorm on a distant horizon as she pulled her long blonde braid over her shoulder. She gripped it in her fist the way she gripped her Ajeel in the heat of anger. The breeze fluttered the wisps of blonde hair along the side of her face. If you wish it, Lord Rahl, I will go. Richard put a comforting hand on the back of her shoulder. This time she didn't tense but welcomed the hand. What do you wish me to do there? I want you to get there and back as soon as possible. I need my sword. I understand. When Kaelin glanced their way, Kara signaled for her and Kaelin returned at a trot. Kara stiffened her back as she addressed Kaelin. Lord Rahl has ordered me to return to Adendrill. Ordered? Kaelin asked. Kara simply smirked. She lifted the Ajeel at Kaelin's chest. For a woods guide, he gets himself in a lot of trouble. As a sister of the Ajeel, I would ask you to watch over him in my place, but I know I do not need to say the words. I won't let him out of my sight. You need to catch up with General Rybish's army first, Richard said. You can get horses from him and make better time to Adendrill. But I also very much need him to know what we're doing. Tell him the whole story. Tell Verna and the sisters, too. They will need to know, and they may have knowledge that would be of use. Richard stared off toward the southwest horizon. I also need an escort if we are to march into Andorath and demand their surrender. Don't worry, Lord Rahl. I intend on ordering Rybish to send men to guard you. They will not be as good as having a Mordsith near, but they will still protect you. I need enough for an impressive escort. When we march into Andorath, I think it would be best if we looked serious, rather than just Kaelin and me and a few guards going alone, especially since Kaelin's power could fail at any time. I want to look to the people there like we mean business. Now you are beginning to make sense, Kara said. 1,000 men should do for an impressive escort, Kaelin said. Swordsmen, lancers, and archers, their best, and extra horses, of course. And we'll need messengers. We have important news of the Chimes and Jigang that must be sent out. We need to coordinate our forces and keep everyone informed. We have armies in various lands we may need to bring south at once. Kara nodded. I will personally select the soldiers to be sent for your escort. Rybish will have elite troops. Fine, but I don't want his fighting ability harmed by taking key men, Richard said. Tell the general I also want him to send detachments to watch the routes north from the old world he had intended to watch, just in case. The most important thing, though, is that I want his main force to turn around and head back this way. Is he to be allowed to attack at will? No. I don't want him risking his army against the Order out on these plains. It would be too costly. As good as his men are, they wouldn't stand a chance against a force the size of the Order's until we can get more men down here. More importantly, I don't want him attacking because his greatest value is if Jigang doesn't know Rybish's force is there. I want Rybish to come east, shadowing Jigang, but staying north and remaining well away. Tell him to use as few scouts as possible, just enough to keep track of the Order, no more. Jigang mustn't know Rybish's force is there. Those Daharan men will be all that stands between the Order and the Midlands if Jigang suddenly turns north. Surprise will be his only ally until we can get messengers to bring in more troops. I don't want to risk Rybish's men if it isn't absolutely necessary, but I need him to be the stopgap if things go wrong. If Andorath surrenders, we can combine their army with ours. If we can banish the Chimes, have the Andorath army under our command, and get more of our other forces down here in time, we might even be able to trap Jigang's army with the ocean at his back. It might even be possible to then use our forces to drive him into the teeth of the Dharmini Dirch. That weapon could kill without our men losing their lives to do it. And in Adendrill, Kara asked. You heard Zed explain what must be done? Yes. On the fifth column on the left, inside the first wizard's enclave, sits a black bottle with a gold filigree top. It must be broken with the sword of truth. Verdeen and I have gone with you to the first wizard's enclave. I remember well the place. Good. You can use the sword to break the bottle as well as I. She nodded. Just set the bottle on the ground, like Zed told us, get the sword and break the bottle. I can do that, Kara said. Richard knew very well how Kara didn't like to have anything to do with magic. He remembered well, too, how she and Verdeen hadn't liked going into the first wizard's enclave. There was also the matter of the keep's shields of magic. If the magic of the keep is really down, you won't have any trouble getting through the shields. They will be down, too. I remember what they feel like. I will know if they're still alive with magic or if I can pass. Tell Berdine everything you know about the chimes. She may already have valuable information. If nothing else, she has Kolo's journal, and with what you tell her, she will know what to search for. Richard held up a finger for emphasis. With his other hand, he gripped her shoulder. But before Berdine, the sword and the bottle first. Don't let either sit vincible for one moment longer than necessary. The chimes may try to stop you. Be aware of that. Be alert and on guard. Stay away from water and fire as best you can. Don't take anything for granted. They may know the spell and the bottle can harm them. Before you leave, we will talk to Du Chaillu and see if she can shed light on how they seduce a person to their death. If she can remember, that may be valuable in warding the chimes. Kara nodded. If she was afraid, she didn't show it. Once I get to General Ravish, I will ride like the wind. I will go first to the keep and get your sword and then break the bottle. After that, I will bring your sword, Berdine, and the book. Where will I find you? In Fairfield, Keelan said. Most likely with our troops, not far out of the city, near the Minister of Culture's estate. If we have to depart, we will leave a message for you, or some of our men. If we can't do that, we will try to tell General Ravish. Richard hesitated. Kara, you will need to take the sword from its scabbard to break the bottle. Of course, but be careful. It's a weapon of magic. And Zed thinks it will still work, still have magic. Kara sighed with unpleasant thoughts. What would it do when I draw it? I don't know for sure, Richard said. It may react to different people in different ways, depending on what they bring to the completion of the magic. I'm still the seeker, but it may work for anyone holding it. I just don't know how its magic will affect you. But it's a weapon that uses rage. Just be careful, and realize that it will want to draw you out, much as you draw it out. It will foment your emotions, especially your anger. Kara's blue eyes gleamed. It will not have to try hard, Richard smiled. Just be careful. After you break the bottle, don't take the sword from its scabbard for any reason less than a matter of life or death. If you kill with it... Her brow drew down when his voice trailed off. If I kill with it, what? Richard had to tell her, lest she do something dangerous. It gives pain. Like the Aegeal, he nodded reluctantly. Maybe worse. His voice lowered as his memories flooded back. Anger is required to counter the pain. If you are filled with righteous rage, that will protect you. But, dear spirits, it will still hurt you. I am Mordsith. I will welcome the pain. Richard tapped the center of his chest. It hurts you in here, Kara. You don't want that kind of pain, believe me. Better you're a Aegeal. She gave him a sad smile of understanding. You need your sword. I will bring it to you. Thank you, Kara. But I will not forgive you for making me leave you without protection. He will not be without protection. They all turned. It was Du Chaillu. She was pale, her hair a mess. But wrapped in a blanket, she no longer shivered. Her face was a picture of grim determination. Richard shook his head. You need to go back to your people. We go with my husband. We protect the Kaharin. Richard decided not to argue the husband part. We'll have troops with us before we can get to Andorath. They are not blade masters. We will take Kara's place protecting you. Kara bowed her head to Du Chaillu. That is good. I will rest better knowing you and your blade masters do this. Richard shot Kara an annoyed glance before turning his attention to the Bakatau Mana spirit woman. Du Chaillu, now that you're safe, I'll not have you risking your lives needlessly. You've already had a brush with death. You must get back to your people. They need you. We are the walking dead. It does not matter. What are you talking about? Du Chaillu clasped her hands. The blade masters were spread out behind her, her royal escort. Beyond them, the mud people hunters watched. As sick as she still looked, Du Chaillu was once again looking noble. Before we left, she said, we told our people we were dead. We told them we were lost to the world of life, and we would not be returned to them unless we reached the Kaharin to warn him and made sure he was safe. Our people wept and mourned us before we departed, because we are dead to them. Only if we do as we said will we be able to return. Not long ago, I heard the chimes of death. Kara, the Kaharan's protector, pulled me back from the spirit world. The spirits in their wisdom allowed me to return so I might fulfill my duty. When Kara returns with your sword and you are safe, only then can we have our lives returned to us so that we might return home. Until then, we are the walking dead. I am not asking if we may be allowed to travel with you. I am telling you that we are going to travel with you. I am the Baka Tau Mana spirit woman. I have spoken. Clenching his teeth, Richard lifted his hand to shake an angry finger at her. Kaelin caught his wrist. Dushalu, Kaelin said. I too have taken such an oath. When I went to the walled city of Ebenicia and saw the people butchered by the Imperial Order, I vowed vengeance. Chandelin and I came across a small army of young recruits who also had seen the dead of their home city. They were determined to punish the men responsible. I swore a covenant that I was dead and could only be returned to life when the men who committed those crimes were punished. The men with me gave up their lives, too, to live again only if we succeeded. One in five of those young men returned to the living with Chandelin and me. But before we did, every one of the men who murdered the people of Ebenicia died. I understand such an oath as you have given, Dushalu. Such a thing is sacred and not to be ignored. You and the Blade Masters may come with us. Dushalu bowed to Kaelin. Thank you for honoring my people's ways. You are a wise woman and worthy of being wife to my husband, too. Richard rolled his eyes. Kaelin, the Mud people need Chandelin and his men. Kara is doing as you ask of her and going to General Rybish and then on to Adendril. Until the general can send men to join with us, we will be alone and vulnerable. Dushalu and her men will be valuable and welcome protection. With so much at stake, Richard, our pride is the last thing we need to be considering. They are coming. Richard took in Kara's blue eyes, icy cold with resolve. She wanted this. Dushalu's dark eyes were iron hard. Her mind was made up. Kaelin's green eyes, well, he didn't even want to think about what was in her green eyes. All right, he said. Until the soldiers can reach us, you may come along. Dushalu directed a puzzled look at Kaelin. Does he always tell you, too, things you already know? Chapter 36 Fitch, his head bowed, could see Master Spink's legs and feet as he walked among the benches, his boots making a slow thunk, thunk, thunk against the plank floor. Around the room, a few people, mainly the older women, sniffled as they wept quietly to themselves. Fitch couldn't blame them. He, too, was occasionally reduced to weeping at penance assembly. The lessons they learned were necessary if they were to fight their evil Haken ways. He understood that, but that didn't make listening any easier. When Master Spink lectured, Fitch preferred to look at the floor rather than by chance meet the man's gaze. To meet the gaze of an Ander as he taught the horrors of what was done to his ancestors by Fitches was shaming. And so it was, Master Spink went on, that the Haken horde came by chance upon that poor farming village. The menfolk, with frantic concern for their families, had gathered together with those other simple Ander men from the farms and other villages around. Together, they prayed to the Creator that their effort to repulse the bloodthirsty invaders might succeed. In desperation, they had already left nearly all their foodstuffs and livestock as a peaceful offering for the Hakens. They had sent messengers to explain the offerings, and that they wished no war, but none of those brave messengers ever returned. So it was a simple plan these men had, to go to the crest of a hill and wave their weapons overhead to make a show of strength, not to invite a fight, of course, but in an urgent effort to convince the Hakens to pass their villages by. These men were farmers, not warriors, and the weapons they waved were simple farm tools. They didn't want a fight. They wanted peace. So there they were. Those men I've taught you about, Shelby, Willen, Camden, Edgar, Newton, Kenway, and all the rest, all those good and kind men who you have come to know over these last few weeks as I've told you their stories, their loves, their lives, their hopes, their simple and decent dreams. There they were, up there on that hill, hoping for no more than to convince the Haken brutes to pass them by. There they were, waving their tools, their axes, their hoes, their sickles, their forks, their flails, waving them in the air, hoping to keep those wives and children you've also come to know safe from harm.
Thump, thump, thump went Master Spink's boots as he came closer to Fitch. The Haken army did not choose to pass those simple men by. The Hakens, instead, laughing and hooting, turned their dominie dirge on those gentle Ander men. Some of the girls gasped. Others wailed aloud. Fitch himself felt a twist of fear in his gut and a lump in his throat. He had to sniffle himself as he imagined their gruesome death. He had come to know those men on the hill. He knew their wives' names, their parents' names, and their children. And while those murderous Haken bastards in their fine fancy uniforms, Fitch could see the boots halt right beside him, where he sat on the end of the bench near the center aisle.
Stood laughing, stood cheering. The Dominie Dirge rang out with its terrible violence, tearing the flesh from those men's bones.
Fitch could feel Master Spink's dark-eyed glare on the back of his neck as the women and many of the men sobbed their grief aloud.
The wails of those poor Ander farm boys rose into the Ander sky. It was their last scream in this life, as their bodies were torn apart by the excellently dressed, laughing, jeering Haken horde, with their weapon of heartless slaughter, the Dominie Dirge.
One of the older women cried out with the horror of it. Master Spink still stood over Fitch. Right at that moment, Fitch wasn't as proud of his messenger garb as he had been earlier, when the other people had whispered to each other in astonishment as he took his seat.
"I see you have yourself a fine new uniform, Fitch," Master Spink said in a voice that made Fitch's blood go cold. Fitch knew he was expected to say something.
"Yes, sir. Though I was a lowly Haken scullion, Master Campbell was kind enough to give me a job as a messenger. He wants me to wear this uniform so all Hakens might see that with Ander help we can do better. He also wants the messengers to reflect well on his office as we help in his work of spreading the word of the Minister of Culture's good work for our people."
Master Spink cuffed Fitch on the side of his head, knocking him from the bench.
"Don't talk back to me. I'm not interested in your Haken excuses."
"I'm sorry, sir."
He knew better than to get up from his hands and knees.
"Hakens always have excuses for the crimes of hate. You're wearing a fancy uniform, just like those murderous Haken overlords enjoyed wearing. And you enjoy it the same as they. And then you try to make it seem as if you don't. To this day, we Anders suffer grievously under the unceasing scourge of Haken hate. Without question, every look from a Haken conveys it. We can never be free of it. There are always Hakens in uniforms they enjoy wearing to remind us of the Haken overlords. You prove your filthy Haken nature by trying to defend the indefensible, your self-centered arrogance, your pride in yourself, your pride in a uniform. You all hunger to be Haken overlords. Every day, as Anders, we must suffer such Haken abuse.
Forgive me, Master Spink. I was wrong. I wore it out of pride. I was wrong to let my sinful Haken nature rule me."
Master Spink grunted his contempt, but then went on with the lesson. Knowing he deserved more, Fitch was grateful to be let off so easy. He let out a sigh.
"With the menfolk murdered, that left the women and children of the village defenseless."
The boots thunk, thunk, thunked as the man started out again, walking among the Hakens sitting on simple benches. Only after he had started away did Fitch dare to get up off his hands and knees and once more take his seat on the bench. His ear chimed something awful, like when Beata had struck him. Master Spink's words bored through that hollow ringing.
"Being Hakens, of course, they decided to go through the village and have their wicked fun."
"No!"
a woman in the back cried out. She fell to sobbing. Hands clasped behind his back, Master Spink walked on, ignoring the interruption. There were frequently such interruptions.
"The Hakens, wishing a feast, went to the village. They were of a mind for some roasted meat."
People fell to their knees, trembling with fear for the people they had come to know. Benches all over the room scuffed against the floor as most of the rest of the people in the room also went down to their knees. Fitch joined them.
"But it was a small village, as you know. After the Hakens slaughtered the livestock, they realized there wasn't enough meat. Hakens, being Hakens,
didn't want for a solution for long. The children were seized. Fitch wished for nothing so much as he wished for the lesson to be over. He didn't know if he could bear to hear any more. Apparently, some of the women were of the same mind. They collapsed to their faces on the floor, hands clasped, as they wept and prayed to the good spirits to watch over those poor, innocent, slain Ander people. You all know the names of those children. We will now go around the room, and you will each give me one of the names you have learned, lest we forget those young lives so painfully taken. You will each give me the name of one of the children from that village, little girls and little boys, who were roasted alive in front of their mothers. Master Spink started at the last row. Each person in turn, as he pointed to them, spoke the name of one of those children, most beseeching after it that the good spirits watch over them. Before they were allowed to leave, Master Spink described the horror of being burned alive, the screams, the pain, and how long it took for the children to die, how long it took for their bodies to cook. It was so grisly and sinister a deed that at one point, for just the briefest moment, Fitch considered perhaps for the first time whether the story could really be true. He had trouble imagining anyone, even the brutal Haken overlords, doing such a horrific thing. But Master Spink was Ander. He wouldn't lie to them, not about something as important as history. Since it's getting late, Master Spink said after everyone had given a child's name, we will leave until next assembly the story of what the Haken invaders did to those women. The children perhaps were lucky not to have to see their mothers used for such perversions as the Hakens did to them. Fitch, along with the rest of the assembly behind him, burst through the doors when they were dismissed, glad to escape for the night, the penance lesson. He had never been so glad for the cool night air. He felt hot and sick as the images of such a death as those children suffered kept going through his head. The cool air, at least, felt good on his face. He pulled the cool, purging air into his lungs. As he was leaning against a slender maple tree beside the path to the road, waiting for his legs to steady, Beata came out of the door. Fitch straightened. There was enough light coming from the open door and the windows, so she would have no trouble seeing him in his new messenger's outfit. He was hoping Beata would find it more appealing than did Master Spink. Good evening, Beata. She halted. She glanced down the length of him, taking in his clothes. Fitch, you look lovely this evening, Beata. I look the same as always. She planted her fists on her hips. I see you've fallen in love with yourself in a fancy uniform. Fitch suddenly lost his ability to think or speak. He had always liked the way the messengers looked in their uniforms, and had thought she would, too. He had been hoping to see her smile or something. Instead, she glared at him. Now he wished more than anything he had just gone home straight away. Master Dalton offered me a position, and I suppose you'll be looking forward to next penance assembly, so you can hear about what those Haken beasts in their fancy uniforms did to those helpless women. She leaned toward him. You'll like that. It will be almost as much fun for you as if you were there watching. Fitch stood with his jaw hanging as she huffed and stormed off into the night. Other people walking down the street saw the tongue-lashing she had given him, a filthy Haken. They smiled in satisfaction, or simply laughed at him. Fitch stuffed his hands in his pockets as he turned his back to the road and leaned a shoulder against the tree. He brooded as he waited for everyone to move along on their own business. It was an hour's walk back to the estate. He wanted to be sure those returning there had gone on so he could walk alone and not have to talk to anyone. He considered going and buying himself some drink. He still had some money left. If not, he would go back and find Morley, and they would both get some drink. Either way, getting drunk sounded good to him. The breeze abruptly felt cooler. It ran a shiver up his spine. He almost leaped out of his boots when a hand settled on his shoulder. He spun and saw it was an older Ander woman. Her swept back nearly shoulder-length hair told him she was someone important. Streaks of gray at the temples told him she was old. There wasn't enough light to see exactly how wrinkled she was, but he could still tell she was. Fitch bowed to the Ander woman. He feared she might want to take up where Beata had left off and take him to task for something or other. Is she someone you care about? The woman asked. Fitch was taken off guard by the curious question. I don't know, he stammered. She was pretty rough with you. I deserved it, ma'am.
Why is that?
Fitch shrugged.
I don't know.
He couldn't figure out what the woman wanted. It gave him goose flesh the way her dark eyes studied him, like she was picking out a chicken for dinner. She wore a simple dress that in the dim light looked like it might be a dark brown. It buttoned to her neck, unlike the more revealing fashion most Ender women wore. Her dress didn't mark her as a noble woman, but that long hair said she was someone important. She seemed somehow different from other Ender women. There was one thing about her that Fitch did think odd. She wore a wide black band tied around her throat, up close to the top of her neck.
Sometimes girls say mean things when they're afraid to admit they like a boy, fearing he won't like her. And sometimes they say mean things because they intend them.
True enough, she smiled.
Does she live at the estate or here in Fairfield?
Here in Fairfield. She works for Inger the butcher. She seemed to think that was a little bit funny.
Perhaps she is used to more meat on the bones. Maybe when you get a little older and fill yourself in more, she will find you more appealing.
Fitch stuffed his hands back in his pockets.
Maybe.
He didn't believe it. Besides, he didn't figure he would ever fill in, as she put it. He figured he was old enough that he was about how he would be. She went back to studying his face for a time.
Do you want her to like you?
She asked at last. Fitch cleared his throat.
Well, sometimes, I guess. At least, I'd like her not to hate me.
The woman had one of those smiles like she was well pleased with something, but he doubted he'd ever understand it.
It could be arranged.
Ma'am?
If you like her, and would like her to like you, it could be arranged.
Fitch blinked in astonishment.
How?
A little something slipped into what she drinks or eats. Understanding came over him all at once. This was a woman of magic. At last he understood why she seemed so strange. He'd heard people with magic were strange.
You mean you could make something up? Some spell or something?
Her smile grew.
Or something. I just started working for Master Campbell. I'm sorry, ma'am, but I couldn't afford it.
Ah, I see. Her smile shrank back down.
And if you could afford it?
Before he could answer, she squinted up at the sky and thought.
Or perhaps it could be ready later on when you get paid.
Her voice turned to little more than a whisper, like she was talking to herself.
Might give me time to see if I couldn't figure out the problem and get it to work again.
She looked him in the eye.
How about it?
Fitch swallowed. He surely didn't want to offend an Ender woman, and one with the gift, besides. He hesitated.
Well, ma'am, the truth is, if a girl's ever going to like me, I'd just as soon she liked me because she liked me. No offense, ma'am. It's kind of you to offer, but I don't think I'd like it if a girl only liked me because of a spell of magic. I think that wouldn't make me feel very good about it, like only magic could make a girl like me.
The woman laughed as she patted his back. It was a soft, lilting laugh of pleasure, not a laugh like she was laughing at him. Fitch didn't think he'd ever heard an Ender who was talking to him laugh in quite that way.
Good for you.
She gestured her emphasis with a finger.
I had a wizard tell me as much once, a very long time ago. A wizard? That must have been frightening, to meet a wizard, I mean.
She shrugged.
Not really. He was a nice man. I was a very little girl at the time. I was born gifted, you see. He told me to always remember that magic was no substitute for people truly caring about you for who you were yourself. I never knew there were wizards around.
Not here, she said. She flicked a hand out into the night.
Back in Adendrill.
His ears perked up.
Adendrill? To the northeast?
My, but aren't you a bright one?
Yes,
to the northeast.
At the Wizard's Keep.
She held out a hand.
I'm Franca. And you?
Fitch took her hand and held it lightly as he dipped to a knee in a deep bow.
I'm Fitch, ma'am.
Franca.
Ma'am? Franca, that's my name. I told you my name, Fitch, so you could call me by my name.
Sorry, ma'am. I mean, Franca. She let out her little laugh again.
Well, Fitch, it was nice to meet you. I must be headed back to the estate. I suppose you will be off to get drunk.
That seems to be what boys your age like to do. Fitch had to admit the idea of getting drunk sounded very good to him. The possibility of hearing about the Wizard's Keep sounded intriguing, though.
I think I'd best be getting back to the estate myself. If you wouldn't mind having a Haken walk with you, I'd be well pleased to go along.
Franca, he added in an afterthought. She studied his face again in that way that made him fidget.
I'm gifted, Fitch. That means I'm different than most people. And so most all people, Ander and Haken both, think of me the way most Ander people think of you, because you're Haken.
They do. But you're Ander.
Being Ander is not enough to overcome the stigma of having magic. I know what it feels like to have people dislike you without them knowing anything about you.
I'd be well pleased to have you walk along with me, Fitch.
Fitch smiled, partly in the shock of realizing he was having a conversation with an Ander woman, a real conversation, and partly in shock that Anders would dislike her, another Ander, because she had magic.
But don't they respect you because you have magic?
They fear me. Fear can be good and bad. Good, because then even though people don't like you, they at least treat you well. Bad, because people often try to strike out at what they fear.
I never looked at it that way before.
He thought about how good it made him feel when Claudine Winthrop called him sir. She only did because she was afraid, he knew, but it still made him feel good. He didn't understand the other part of what Franca said, though.
You're very wise. Does magic do that, make a person wise?
She let out the breathy laugh again, as if she found him as amusing as a fish with legs. If it did, then they would call it the wise man's keep instead of the wizard's keep. Some people would be wiser, perhaps, had they not been born with a buttress of magic. He'd never met anyone who'd been to Adendrill, much less the wizard's keep. He could hardly believe a person with magic would talk to him. To an extent, he was worried, because he didn't know anything about magic, and he figured that if she got angry, she might do him harm. He thought her fascinating, though, even if she was old. They started out down the road toward the estate in silence. Sometimes silence made him nervous. He wondered if she could tell what he thought with her magic. Fitch looked over at her. She didn't look like she was paying any attention to his thoughts. He pointed at her throat.
Mind if I ask what sort of thing that is, Franca? That band you wear at your throat? I've never seen anyone wear anything like it before. Is it something to do with magic?
She laughed aloud.
Do you know, Fitch, that you are the first person in a great many years to ask me about this?
Even if it is because you don't know enough to fear asking a sorceress such a personal question.
Sorry, Franca. I didn't mean to say nothing offensive.
He began to worry he had stupidly said something to make her angry. He surely didn't want an Ander woman and one with magic, besides, angry with him. She was silent for a time as they walked on down the road. Fitch stuck his sweating hands back in his pockets. At last, she spoke again.
It isn't that, Fitch. Offensive, I mean. It just brings up bad memories. I'm sorry, Franca. I shouldn't have said it. Sometimes I say stupid things. I'm sorry.
He was wishing he had gone to get drunk instead. After a few more strides, she stopped and turned to him.
No, Fitch, it wasn't stupid. Here.
She hooked the throat band and pulled it down for him to see. Even though it was dark, there was a moon, and he could see a thick, lumpy line, all white and waxy-looking, wringing her neck. It looked to him to be a nasty scar.
Some people tried to kill me once, because I have magic.
Moonlight glistened in her moist eyes.
Saren Rayjack and his followers.
Fitch never heard the name.
Followers?
She pulled the throat band back up.
Saren Rayjack hates magic. He has followers who think the same as he. They get people all worked up against those with magic. Gets them in a state of wild hate and bloodlust.
There's nothing uglier than a mob of men when they have it in their heads to hurt someone. What one alone wouldn't have the nerve to do. Together, they can easily decide is right and then accomplish. A mob takes on a mind of its own, a life of its own, just like a pack of dogs chasing down some lone animal. Rayjack caught me and put a rope around my neck. They tied my hands behind my back. They found a tree, threw the other end of the rope over a limb, and hoisted me up by that rope around my neck.
Fitch was horrified. Dear spirits. Must have hurt something awful.
She didn't seem to hear him as she stared off.
They were stacking kindling under me, going to have a big fire. Before they could get the fire lit, I managed to get away.
Fitch's fingers went to his throat, rubbing his neck as he tried to imagine hanging on a rope around his neck. That man, Saren Rajak, is he a Haken?
She shook her head as they started out again. You don't have to be Haken to be bad, Fitch. They walked in silence for a time. Fitch got the feeling she was off somewhere in her memories of hanging by a rope around her throat. He wondered why she didn't choke to death. Maybe the rope wasn't tight, he decided, tied with a knot so it would hold its loop. He wondered how she got away. He knew, though, that he'd asked enough about it and dared ask no more. He listened to the stone chips crunching under their boots. He stole careful glances now and again. She no longer looked happy like she had at first. He wished he'd kept his question to himself. Finally, he thought maybe he'd ask her about something that had made her smile before. Besides, it was why he had really wanted to walk along with her in the first place.
Franca, what was the wizard's keep like?
He was right. She did smile. Huge. You can't even imagine it, and I couldn't tell you how big it is. It stands up on a mountain overlooking Adendrill, beyond a stone bridge crossing a chasm thousands of feet deep. Part of the keep is cut from the mountain itself. There are notched walls rising up like cliffs. Broad ramparts, wider than this road, go to various structures. Towers rise up above the keep here and there. It was magnificent.
Did you ever see a seeker of truth? Did you ever see the Sword of Truth when you was there?
She frowned over at him.
You know, as a matter of fact, I did. My mother was a sorceress. She went to Adendrill to see the first wizard about something. What, I have no idea. We went across one of those ramparts to the first wizard's enclave in the keep. He has a separate place where he had wonders of every sort. I remember that bright and shiny sword.
She seemed well pleased with telling him about it, so he asked,
What was it like, the first wizard's enclave and the Sword of Truth?
Well, let me see. She put a finger to her chin to think a moment before she began her story. Chapter 37. When Dalton Campbell reached to dip his pen, he saw the legs of a woman walking through the doorway into his office. By the thick ankles, he knew before his gaze lifted that it was Hildemara Chanbur. If there was a woman with less appealing legs, he had yet to meet her. He set down the pen and rose with a smile. Lady Chanbur, please come in. In the outer office, the morning sunlight revealed Rowley on duty, standing ready to summon the messengers should Dalton have called for them. He didn't at the moment, but with Hildemara Chanbur paying a visit, that eventuality seemed more likely. As she closed the door, Dalton went around his desk and pulled out a comfortable chair in invitation. She wore a wool dress the color of straw. The color of the dress conveyed a sickly pallor to her flesh. The hem came to mid-calf on her puffy, straight, pillar-like legs. Hildemara glanced briefly at the chair but remained standing.
So good to see you, Lady Chanbur.
She put on a smile.
Oh, Dalton, must you always be so proper? We've known each other long enough for you to call me Hildemara.
He opened his mouth to thank her, but she added,
When we're alone.
Of course, Hildemara. Hildemara Chanbur never made visits to inquire after anything so mundane as matters of work. She only arrived like a chill wind before a storm. Dalton decided it best to let the foul weather build on its own without his help, like some wizard summoning it forth. He also thought it better to keep the meeting on a more formal level, despite her indulgence with her name. Her brow bunched as if her attention were distracted. She reached out to fuss with a possibly loose thread on his shoulder. Sunlight, streaming in the windows, sparkled off the jewels on her fingers, and the blood-red ruby necklace hanging across the expanse of exposed skin on her upper chest. The dress wasn't nearly as low-cut as those worn lately at feasts, yet he still found its cut less than refined. With the woman's tidy touch, Hildemara picked and then smoothed. Dalton glanced but didn't see anything. Seeming to have satisfied herself, her hand gently pressed out the fabric of his light coat against his shoulder.
My, my, Dalton. But don't you have fine shoulders? So muscular and firm.
She looked into his eyes.
Your wife is a lucky woman to have a man so well endowed.
Thank you, Hildemara. His caution prevented him saying another word. Her hand moved to his cheek, her bejeweled fingers gliding over the side of his face.
Yes, she is a very lucky woman.
and your husband is a lucky man. Chortling, she withdrew her hand.
Yes, he is often lucky. But, as is said, what is commonly thought luck is often merely the result of incessant practice.
Wise words, Hildemara. The cynical laugh evaporated, and she soon returned the hand to his collar, ordering it as if it needed ordering. Her hand wandered to the side of his neck, a finger licking the rim of his ear.
The word I hear is that your wife is faithful to you.
I am a lucky man, my lady.
And that you are equally faithful to her.
I care for her deeply, and I also respect the vows we have taken.
How quaint.
Her smile widened. She pinched his cheek. He thought it more stern than playful in manner.
Well, some day I hope to convince you to be a little less stuffy in your attitudes, shall we say?
If any woman could open my eyes to a broader attitude, Hildemara, it would be you. She patted his cheek, a cynical laugh returning.
Oh, Dalton, but you are an exceptional man.
Thank you, Hildemara. Coming from you, that is quite the compliment.